My guest is Vandana Shiva. She is an internationally renowned environmental and social activist and was formerly one of India's top nuclear physicists. She has been credited as the principal founding leader of India's ecological and ecofeminism movement. In 1982, Dr. Shiva founded the Research Foundation for Science, Technology, and Ecology in New Delhi, which led to the creation of an organization dedicated to the restoration of organic farming across India and the preservation of indigenous knowledge and culture. She is also one of the leaders on the board of the International Forum of Globalization with Ralph Nader and Maud Barlow and Jerry Mander. And for several decades, she's fought for changes in the globalized practices of agriculture and food. And she's traveled the world speaking against biopiracy of indigenous foods and their medicinal properties by large agricultural and pharmaceutical corporations. And her activist efforts have created grassroots organizations throughout the developing world to counter genetic engineering of crops, as well as empower women throughout the third world. She has received numerous international awards, including the Alternative Nobel Prize, the Right Livelihood Award, and others. She is also the author of several important books, including Earth Democracy and Manifestos on the Future of Food and Seed. And her most recent is Soil, Not Oil. Her website is VandanaShiva.org. And nice to have you back with us today.
A pleasure to be back.
First, I want to deal with the idea that we recently had a meeting of the G8 nations. All of them, without exception, are now supporting the globalization of seeds and agriculture and turning over the power to do that, to solve the world's hunger problems, to Monsanto. And as we know, Monsanto has a very nefarious background when it comes to putting people above profits. Could you take us, please, for those who may not be aware of why our president and the other presidents of other countries, like in France and England, why we should not have the approach we are taking now to genetic engineering as a way to solve the world's food problems? And you could maybe use some of the examples of the suicide rates in India and why, and the differences in genetically engineered seeds and heirloom organic seeds and farming techniques. So I'm going to keep quiet and use this much like a classroom on the air to really give us a primer, okay?
Well, the reason governments are so subservient to Monsanto is because Monsanto has worked over the last 30 to 40 years corrupting our governments. Monsanto is not just causing genetic pollution by introducing genetically modified crops, which then pollinate non-GM crops and make organic unviable. Worse, they literally pollute our democracy and make democracy unviable. So the single agenda of the White House is to push Monsanto seeds on little countries like Nepal and Haiti, where we then have to mobilize to say, keep your toxic genes home. The second reason why governments are falling into this trap is because of Monsanto's power of propaganda. Monsanto says we've increased yields of crops. That is not at all true. The technology doesn't allow it. The technology uses a gene gun or a plant cancer to introduce one gene with one trait or make stacks of single gene traits. The other properties of the plant come from the non-engineered plant. They come from the yield of the plant, they come from the resilience of the plant, they come from the taste, none of which genetic engineering can engineer. Engineering is a very crude method to deal with the complex systems that plants are and that life is. So the advantage really is two traits, herbicide-resistant crops and Bt toxin crops. So when you challenge them on yield, they say, oh, we'll increase the yields by controlling weeds and pests. But what they've given us is super weeds and super pests. In India, they introduced the Bt cotton, which has increased pests and increased pesticide use. But worse, these seeds are genetically engineered for one purpose alone, to get a patent. I happened to be at a meeting where the industry laid out its plans in 1987, and they said clearly, the reason we have to do genetic engineering is it's the only way we can get through the door of patenting seeds and patenting land, because now we can claim we have made something novel, and we are the creators, we are the inventors, therefore we should be the owners. What this means for us is they collect super royalties, and those royalties end up coming from poor peasants who borrow to buy the seed, who borrow for the pesticides, get into a debt trap, and 250,000, quarter million Indian farmers have committed suicide since Monsanto entered the country and started to take over the seed supply. Farmers are being killed, but say diversity is being destroyed. Look at the only crops that we are growing around the world, because that's where the royalties are coming from. Corn and soya and canola and cotton. As if there were no other crops humanity grew. We used to eat 8,500 species of plants, all of which are disappearing. And then they're killing other species. We've done studies that show 22% soil organisms disappeared within 4 years of cultivation of BT cotton. The bees are dying. Bees are dying not just because of the pesticides. The Cornell study recorded how butterflies, larvae fed with pollen from BT corn died, whereas the normal butterflies feed on the pollen. So we are seeing a destruction of life across the board. And the worst thing is these corporations are incapable of delivering anything we need. They can't give us a good seed. They're only capable of creating non-renewable and patented seed. We need seeds for climate resilience. They are taking patents on that, but they can't create climate resilience. And that is why I have started a campaign this year, a global campaign for seed freedom, to save our seeds and to resist and question the patent laws that make it illegal to save seeds, and also are the reason our governments are destroying our seed freedom and our seed sovereignty. And I do hope you will take this on in a big way.
We are. I appreciate that oversight. Let's say that right now you had an opportunity to sit across from Bill Gates, the second wealthiest man in the world, who has spent billions of dollars through the Gates Foundation promoting genetically engineered seeds. And also he is a big believer in vaccines for developing countries and third world countries, so that the people will get their vaccines, but also be contraceptively manipulated so they can have children after these vaccines. He's actually made that statement, and we played that tape. If you could have a chance to speak with him and the President of the United States, President Barack Obama, on their policies of being 100% pro-Monsanto, pro-genetic engineering, pro-helping the poor, what would you say to them?
Anything to them. I'd just bring them to our farm. I'd let them see the 700 varieties of rice that we grow. I'd let them taste the delicious food that comes from that diversity. I'd let them see the butterflies and the bees and the birds that have come back and the earthworm castings all over that are creating 10 times more nitrogen, 7 times more phosphorus than your fertilizers can ever give you. I'd let them experience the richness of biodiversity. I'd let them see that per acre on our farms, we can grow 2 to 3 times more food than conventional farming and definitely provide more nutrition. The golden rice that is supposed to solve the problem of blindness is a pathetic 34 micrograms of vitamin A. Our crops have 1,400 micrograms. We are actually decreasing the nutrition availability through the model that Monsanto proposes and the model that Bill Gates and Obama are blindly supporting. I really believe in your mind is that closed. Just talking doesn't open it. An interaction with nature, an interaction with diversity, the activation of your taste buds and the opening of your mind, that's what they need.
Take us a little further, if you would, please, into the suffering of the Indian farmer and why they're committing suicide. Why can't the government, why can't NGOs, why can't someone intercede? Because if I've understood the statistics, there's somewhere between 240 and 270,000 Indian farmers who've committed suicide. Could you tell us more about that, please?
The suicides really started in the late 90s, which is when globalization allowed the takeover of the seed supply by corporations like Monsanto, which formed joint ventures with some Indian companies, but they also locked other Indian companies into licensing arrangements. So in cotton seed alone, about 60 Indian companies are only allowed to sell Monsanto's BT cotton GMO seed. Now, in America, they lock the farmer in directly with a contract. In India, they lock in the companies, so the companies aren't allowed to sell anything more. Then they influence governments. So I put in a request to know how many new varieties had our government released in the last few years since Monsanto came. Not one. So the farmer is encouraged to not depend on his old supply and buy these new seeds. The old seeds go. The government stops breeding. The older Indian seed companies start breeding their own varieties. They pay royalty to Monsanto. So there's no other alternative on the marketplace. Now, the promise of these seeds is you're going to become a millionaire. You don't become a millionaire, you get into debt. And soon farmers know they can't pay back. Now, every suicide I know, because we've been studying this all along, every suicide I know is committed on the day the creditors, who are the agents of these seed and chemical companies, come to collect the land, because the credit was given against the land. That was what was mortgaged. And the day the farmer is losing the land, he goes quietly to his field, drinks a bottle of pesticide, and ends his life. The children don't know, the wife doesn't know. Someone finds the body lying in the field, comes back and tells the widow. Now, what we've done is, A, highlight the issue, to create an alternative. In these regions where the suicides are highest, and most of them are in the cotton belt, which is all Monsanto's cotton now, we started saving old open-pollinated varieties of cotton, distributing them, helping farmers go organic, and then helping them sell what they grow, helping the local weavers resurrect the weaving, creating beautiful clothing like Gandhi promoted, the hand-spun, hand-woven clothing, and we call it fibers of freedom. Because what Monsanto has brought is seeds of suicide. And what we spread, seeds of life, seeds of freedom, and the cotton derived from these seeds as fibers of freedom. So we are doing our little bit. We don't have Monsanto's deep pockets. We don't have the capacity to exploit the earth and to exploit the farmers. Every year they're taking out 10 billion rupees on cotton royalties alone. That's only India. We did a calculation of how many royalties they're collecting from Argentina, from Brazil, from Canada, from the U.S., it would be mind-boggling. There's a very powerful chart in the Forbes magazine of November the 6th, 2011. Why does Uncle Sam love GMOs? Why does Uncle Sam love Franken Foods? And the analysis is very clear. The U.S. is in a negative trade balance with on every other product, electrical, automobiles, textiles, everything. It's only one sector on which the U.S. has a positive trade balance, and that's agribusiness and seed royalties. That is why President Obama thinks that expanding Monsanto's empire is expanding the American interest. But this is not the American interest, because the American farmers are getting into debt. The American citizens are denied their right to know what they're eating. The American food diversity is being destroyed. This is anti-America if we think of America as the America of the people.
Thank you for those insights. My last area of questions has to do with what I believe many Americans, many people throughout the world have been doing for a long time and do today. You've heard of Scott and Helen Nearing. Are you familiar with them? The Nearings?
No.
In the 1950s, 60s, for about 40 years, this couple lived on a small farm, 100% self-sustaining, and people, including myself, would visit with them, and you would see the ease by which they go through a day where everything was just wonderful. I remember having a conversation with Helen Nearing, and butterflies were landing on her shoulder, and I thought, I've never seen that before. And she was a magnet of love in nature. I remember we were having a lunch outside, and a fawn came over. I don't know where the mother was, but the fawn came over, and Scott was petting the fawn and gave him some lettuce, and then he went back into the woods. We have lost the sacredness of food. Because in part, I believe we've lost the sacred connection with land. Land has been there to exploit, to tear down what was there, to build skyscrapers and malls and subdivisions, and something for our immediate use, but not looking at how that might impact us later on. So would you do this, please? Would you, from your perspective, talk about the spiritual conversation that we should be having between all humans about the sources of our food, the earth, and reconnect with that which is essential and sacred?
I think the recovery of the sacred is vital for humanity's future. First, because all the destruction that's taking place around us, including the destruction of our food, the destruction of the land, destruction of the earth, was rooted in the desacralization that was vital to allow a very narrow, mechanistic, reductionist worldview to emerge that thought of nature as dead and merely raw material to be exploited for industrial processes. And in the process, if you have to assault and rape nature, that is progress. If you have to destroy the sacred in indigenous communities, that too is progress. Why do we need this so badly? Because this desacralized war against the earth is bringing us to the limit of our survival on this planet. I will be going to the Earth Summit, which is 20 years after the first Earth Summit. And the central issue, at least I'm carrying and many people will be carrying, 100,000 Indian people, children, farmers, have signed the petition on the rights of Mother Earth. And of course that means bringing the sacred back to the earth, recognizing that the earth is our mother, the earth is inviolable, and her rights to continue to be able to provide for us are the basis of all our rights. Why do we need to do this with food? Because food becomes us. And if food is poisoned, our bodies are poisoned. We get disease. We are going to be releasing a new report in a few weeks' time. Poison in our food. What happened to Indian food system as we got rid of the idea of food as sacred? One of our most ancient texts, which has been a deep inspiration for me, is called the Taittiriya Upanishad. And this Upanishad is only about the sacredness of food. It says, everything is food. Everything is something else's food. Basically, that's the food web, which is the web of life. And then it goes on to say something even more powerful. It says there is no duty on earth higher than the growing and giving of food in health and abundance. That's the highest duty of being on this planet. That's the duty our small farmers are being denied. That's the duty our organic farmers are being denied. That's the duty the seed savers are being told, no, you can't save seeds because seed is intellectual property of Monsanto. So in my view, bringing the sacred is vital because that's the reality. It's vital because it allows us to live better, more decently, and it's vital because that's the only way we're going to reduce the power of the Monsantos of the planet.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you sharing this with us. You're speaking to us now from your farm out there in India? Where?
No, at this point I'm in Delhi. I will be going to the farm.
The farm's at the foot of the Himalayas?
I'm in Delhi for the meeting. Yes, and you must come sometime.
All right. Well, you give me an invitation this summer in the month of August. I'll do some traveling, and I'll come and film all this. I didn't know that.
I'll give you the details. Wonderful. Look forward to having you here.